Speed is the essence of chess, old boy.
Don't let the brute bully me, Mrs. Tappert.
I think you're quite capable of taking care of yourself, Doctor. Besides, how can anyone bully effectively from an invalid bed?
If you moved your bishop, you'd make things a bit awkward for me.
When I want your advice, I'll ask for it.
Mother, is that the way respectable general practitioners talk to their patients in the days of your far-distant youth?
Now, how on earth do you expect poor Nurse Whalen to read when you never for an instant hold your tongue?
I don't mind, Mrs. Tavert. Don't bother about me.
After listening to my sprightly conversation for nearly 5 years, Nurse Whalen pays no more attention to me than if I were a deaf-mute.
And who can blame her?
Even when pain and anguish wring my brow and I swear like 50,000 troopers, I never manage to bring the blush of shame to her maiden cheek.
No, it's exasperating.
It's worse than that, nurse. It's inconsiderate. Watch the doctor. He's about to move. Be very careful, old boy. The position is fraught with danger.
I'm going to move my knight.
What would you say if I gave that pawn a little push and murmured, check?
I should say it was your right, but I should think it a trifle vulgar.
Do you know what I'd do now in your place?
No, I don't.
I'd catch my foot in the leg of the table and kick it over accidentally. That's the only way you can save yourself from getting the worst hiding I've ever given you.
Go to the devil. There.
Ah, you do that, do you? All right.
If you please, ma'am, Major LeConder wants to know if it's too late for him to come in and have a drink.
Of course not. Where is he?
He's at the door, sir.
Ask him to come in.
Very good, ma'am.
You know him, don't you, old boy?
No, I've never met him. He's the fellow who's just taken that furnished house on the golf links, isn't he?
Yes, yes, I knew him years ago in India, and that's why he came here.
He was one of Mother's numerous admirers. I understand that she treated him very badly.
I can well believe it. Does he still cherish a hopeless passion for you, Mrs. Tappert?
I really don't know, Dr. Harvester. You'd better ask him.
Is he Indian Army?
No, police. He's just retired. He's a very good chap. And I believe he's rather a good golfer. Colin has played with him 2 or 3 times.
I asked him to dine tonight so that Morris could get a game of bridge, but he couldn't come.
Major LeConder.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Oh, do come in.
Thank you.
Oh, how nice of you to look in.
I was on my way home. I saw your lights were on, so I thought I'd just ask if anyone would like to give me a Jock and Doris.
Well, now, help yourself. The whiskey's there on the table.
Oh, right, thank you. How are you, nurse?
Very well, thank you.
Good. And the patient?
Bearing up pretty well, considering all he has to put up with.
I see you're in your usual high spirits.
I don't think you know Dr. Harvester.
How do you do?
Mrs. Tabret tells me you're a very good doctor.
Well, I take great pains to impress the fact on my patient.
His only serious fault is that he thinks he can play chess.
Well, don't let me disturb your game.
It's finished.
Not at all. I have 3 possible moves. What do you say to that?
Mate, you poor fish.
Oh, damn.
Have you beaten him?
Hollow.
Well, I won't keep you up. I'll just swallow my drink and take myself off. I really only came to say I was sorry I couldn't come to dinner.
There's no hurry, you know. I'm not going to bed for hours.
We're really waiting up for Stella and Colin. They've gone to the opera.
Well, I'm a night owl. I never go to bed till I can't help it.
You're the man for my money.
Well, I've got a day's work before me. I'll just have a drop of scotch to assuage the pangs of defeat, and then I must run.
Please, please do.
Let's send the rest of them off to bed, Major, and have a good old gossip by ourselves.
Righto. I'm willing.
Now, if you really want to stay up, Morris, let Nurse Whalen get you ready, and then Colin can help you.
All right. What do you say to that, Nurse?
Well, it's just as you like. I'm quite prepared to stay up until Mrs. Morris comes in. I'll put you to bed after you've said goodnight to her.
No, come on. You're looking tired.
Yes, you're looking a little peaked, nurse. I think it's time you had another holiday.
Oh, I don't want a holiday for months.
Put your shoulder to the wheel, nurse, and gently trundle the wounded hero to his bedchamber.
Shall I come and help?
Not on your life. It's bad enough to be messed about by one person. I don't want a crowd, damn it.
Sorry. I'll open the door for you now.
Oh, thank you.
I shall only be 10 minutes.
She seems a very nice woman, that nurse.
Yes. She's extremely competent, and I must say she's very gentle and very kind. Her patience is really wonderful.
You've had her ever since poor Morris crashed, haven't you?
Oh, no. No, no, no. We had three or four before she came. All more or less odious.
She's a rattling good nurse. I think you're lucky to have got her.
I'm sure we are. The only fault I have to find with her is that she's so very reserved. Except for her month's holiday every August, she's been with us all day and every day for nearly 5 years. And I only just know that her name's Beatrice. She calls the boys Mr. Morris and Mr. Colin, and tell us she always calls Mrs. Morris. She seems to be always well on her guard. No, she certainly doesn't encourage familiarity.
I can't imagine skylarking with her at a Sunday school treat, I must admit.
And of course, she's a little tactless. It never seems to occur to her that Morris wants to be alone with his wife. Poor lamb. He has so little. Well, he likes to say good night to Stella the last thing, and he likes to say it without anyone looking on. That's why he's staying up now.
Poor old boy.
He can't bear the thought of going to sleep without kissing her. And Nurse Wayland always seems to find something to do just that last moment. He doesn't want to hurt her feelings by sending her out of the room, and he's terrified of being thought sentimental. So he uses every sort of trick and device to get her out of the way.
But good Lord, why don't you tell her? After all, there's no reason why a man shouldn't kiss his wife goodnight if he wants to.
She's terribly sensitive. Haven't you noticed how often rather tactless people are?
I suppose Morris is absolutely dependent on her.
Absolutely. All sort of rather unpleasant things have to be done for him, poor dear. And he can't bear that anyone should know about them, especially Stella.
Yes, I've discovered that.
Is there really no chance of his getting better, Doctor?
I'm afraid not.
It's a miracle that he's alive at all.
He was terribly smashed up, you know. The lower part of his spine was broken and the plane caught fire and he was badly burned.
And when you think that he was flying all through the war and he never even had a mishap.
His courage amazes me. He never seems low or depressed.
Never, never. His spirits are wonderful. It's one of the most anguishing things I know, to see him when he's in dreadful pain, forcing a joke from his lips.
I'm sorry to think Colin is going away so soon, Mrs. Tabret. I think his being here has done Morris a lot of good.
When they were boys, they were always great friends, you know, and brothers aren't always.
Not indeed.
And Colin had been away so long. He went to Central America just before Morris crashed, you know. He had put all his share of his father's money in a coffee plantation. It's doing very well. He loves the life out there, and it does seem cruel to ask him to give it up, to help us to look after his crippled brother.
Well, I think it would be very unfair. One has no right to ask anyone to give up his own chance of making the best he can of life.
At all events, with a young one may ask. The likelihood of their consenting is very slight.
Here we are again. I'm all fixed up and ready for any excitement.
Well, I must go.
And Nurse Wayland should go to bed.
I'll just gather my things together and say good night. Are you sure Mrs. Morris and your brother won't go and have supper after the opera?
I'm sure they will. I particularly told Stella she was to have a real treat. It's not often she goes on the loose, poor dear.
Well, then they won't be home till four.
Does that mean you disapprove of my staying up, you hard and brutal woman?
Doesn't Dr. Harvest?
Very much. But I'm aware that Morris has no intention of going to sleep till he knows his wife is safely home again. And my theory is that it does people good now and then to do what they shouldn't.
Aha, that's the kind of doctor for me.
What's that?
What?
What, Morris?
I thought I heard a car. Yes, by Jove, it's Stella.
Do you mean to say you can hear it from this distance?
Yeah. You bet your life I can. That's the family bus. Now, just stay a minute and see Stella, Doctor. She's got her best bib and tucker on, and she's a sight for sore eyes.
What were they giving at the opera tonight?
Tristan. That's why I insisted on Stella going. It was after Tristan that we got engaged. Do you remember, Mother?
Yes, of course I do.
We'd all been to hear it, and then we went on to supper. I drove Stella round Regent's Park in a little two-seater I had then, and I swore I'd go on driving round and round till she promised to marry me. Tristan had given her such an appetite that by the time we were halfway round the second time, she said, "Oh, hell, if I must either marry you or die of starvation, I'd sooner marry you."
Oh, is there one word of truth in this story, Mrs. Tabret?
All I know is that the rest of us had only just ordered our supper when they came in looking like a pair of cats who'd swallowed a canary and said they were engaged.
Stella.
Darling. Have you missed me?
Why are you back already, you wretched girl? You promised me to go and have supper.
I was so thrilled and excited by the opera, wasn't I, Colin?
Yes, she simply couldn't eat a thing.
Well, hang it all. You might have gone to Lucien's and had a dance or two and a bottle of champagne. What's the good of my buying you a new dress when you won't let anyone see it? She said it was too dressed up to go to the opera in, Major. But I exercised my marital authority and made her.
Quite right.
Darling, I wanted to show it off in the intervals, but I hadn't the nerve, so I kept my cloak on.
Well, take it off now and show the gentlemen. The only way I managed to get them to stay was by promising to let them have a look at your new dress when you came home.
Oh, nonsense. As if Major LeConda or Dr. Harvester knew one frock from another.
Oh, don't be so damned contemptuous of the male sex, Stella. Take off your cloak and let's have a good look at you.
You brute, Morris. You've made me feel shy now.
Oh, it's a lovely
set.
Hello? What's the matter?
Stella?
Oh, it's nothing. I feel so frightfully faint.
Oh, my dear.
Stella.
It's all right, Morris. Don't fuss. Put your head down between your knees, Stella.
No, don't come near me. I shall be all right again in a minute. Silly of me.
I'm sorry, darling. It was my fault.
It's nothing. I feel better already.
It's my belief that she's just faint from lack of food. At what time did you dine?
We didn't dine.
Oh, you are a ridiculous pair.
Really quite all right now.
Nurse, would you mind going into the kitchen and seeing if you can find anything for these silly young things to eat?
Of course not. There ought to be some ham. I'll make some sandwiches.
And, Colin, get a bottle of champagne out of the cellar.
All right, Mother. Is there any ice in the house? I've got a thirst I wouldn't sell for £20.
Well, I'll say goodbye. I'm so sorry you're feeling poorly, Stella.
I shall be all right when I've had something to eat. I think Mrs. Tablet is quite right. What I want is a large ham sandwich with a lot of mustard on it.
You're looking better, you know. Just for a moment, you were as white as a sheet.
Bye, Millie.
Oh, goodbye. It was so nice of you to look in.
Good night, Morris.
Good night.
Good night, Major.
Good night, Major.
Good night.
I'll just stay a moment or two longer, if you don't mind. I don't trust these young women who don't feed themselves properly.
Doctor, shall we take a turn in the garden?
Oh, by all means.
Will it? It is so warm and lovely.
Yes, and I hope Nurse Whelan has the sense to cut a sandwich for me, too.
Oh, she makes a very good sandwich. She's quite, you're much better than I am at it.
Oh, Morris.
Darling.
I'm sorry I made such a fool of myself.
You scared the life out of me, you little beast. Why didn't you go on to some place, have a bite before you came home?
I didn't want to. I wanted to get back. You don't imagine I care a hang about dancing.
You little liar. How can anyone dance as well as you without being crazy about it? You're the best dancer I ever danced with.
I'm not so young as I was.
You're 28. You're only a girl. You ought to be having the time of your life. Oh, my dear. It is rotten for you.
Oh, darling, don't. You mustn't think that. Don't imagine for a moment that I've given up a thing that meant anything to me. I married you because I loved you. What a foul brute I should be if I stopped loving you now that you need my love more than ever.
Oh, my dear, we can't love because we ought to. Love comes and goes, and we can none of us help ourselves.
What do you mean? Has there been anything in my behavior to lead you to think that I wasn't the same as I've always been?
No, darling. You've been angelic always. Always. Why, what's the matter? You suddenly went quite pale. You're not feeling faint again.
No, I'm all right.
You know, if I've seemed often to take for granted all you've done for me, you mustn't think I'm not conscious all the time how much I owe you.
Oh, that's very silly of you, my pet. I don't know that I've done anything for you at all except be moderately civil. You never let me.
I'll never let you nurse me. Not on your life. I couldn't have borne that you should have anything to do with the disgusting side of illness, my precious. I'm so grateful to you, Stella. You know that I'm never going to get well, don't you?
I don't indeed. It's a long business. We know that. but I'm absolutely convinced that you get at all events very much better.
They tell me that one of these days they'll try operating again to see if they can't possibly put me right, but I know they're lying. They pretend they can do something in order to give me hope, and I pretend to believe them because it's the easiest thing to do. I know I'm here for life, Stella.
Oh, then, let's take what comfort we can in the great joy we've had in one another in the days when you were well and strong. I shall always be grateful for the happiness you gave me and for your love.
Do you think that's changed? No. I love you as deeply, as devotedly as I ever did. I'm not often silly and sentimental, am I?
Is it so silly to be sentimental? No, you're not often.
You're everything in the world to me. People have been most awfully kind to me, and it's not till you're crocked up as I am that you find out how kind people are, but there's not one of them that I wouldn't see in hell if it would save you from unhappiness or trouble.
Well, I wouldn't tell them if I were you. I don't believe they'd awfully like it.
I ought to be frightened because I'm so dependent on you, but I'm not, because I know, not just with my mind or my heart, but with every nerve in me, how good you are.
Now, darling, you really are exaggerating.
My precious, you can laugh at me, but I see the tears in your eyes.
Morris, I am a very weak, very imperfect, and a very sinful woman.
You silly little ass.
Why are you saying all this to me just tonight?
I should never have mentioned it, only I wanted to tell you that it's you who've given me the courage to carry on. I'm not unhappy. I don't know how many years I shall hang on, but if you'll help me, darling, I think I can make a pretty good job of it. I owe everything to you. Nothing matters to me very much when I know I shall see you tomorrow, and next day, and the day after that, and always...
Maurice, I'm unworthy of such love. I'm so ashamed. I'm so selfish. I'm so thoughtless.
Never.
Why did you make me go out tonight? Did you think it was any pleasure to me?
I was thinking of my pleasure. I wanted you to hear again the music we'd heard together that night we got engaged. Do you remember how you cried in the second act when Tristan and Isolde sing a duet of theirs? And I held your hand in the dark.
I cried because I loved you and I was happy.
Did you cry tonight?
I don't know.
You know, that music is stunning, isn't it?
People seem to think it's above the average.
You seemed to carry it still in your eyes when you came in. They were bright and shining. You've never looked so beautiful as you look tonight.
Oh, go on, darling. I can bear much more in the same strain.
I could go on for weeks.
No, then I'd be afraid you were prejudiced. But go on till the sandwiches come in.
The honest to God truth is that you're ever so much lovelier than when I married you. What is there that gives you this sudden new radiance?
I don't know why I should look any different from usual.
I watch your face. I know every change in it from day to day. A year ago you had a strained, almost a hunted look, but... Now lately you've had an air that is strangely peaceful. You've gained a sort of beautiful serenity.
Oh, my poor lamb. I'm afraid that can only be due to advancing years. Soon you'll discover the first wrinkle on my forehead, then the first white hair.
No, no, you must never grow old. I couldn't bear it. Oh, how cruel that all that beauty...
No, don't, Morris. Please.
It would have been better for both of us if I'd been killed when I crashed. I'm no use to you. I'm no use to anybody.
How can you say that? Don't you know how desperately afraid I was when they told me you were hurt? And how relieved, how infinitely thankful when they told me at last that you would live?
They should never have let me. Why didn't they put me out of my misery when I was all smashed up? They only wanted an injection a little stronger than usual. That was the cruelty, to bring me back to life. Cruel to me and... 10 times more cruel to you.
I won't let you say it. It's not true. It's not true.
I think I could have borne it if we'd had a child. Oh, Stella. If only we'd had one, I could think to myself that it was you and me. And you would have something to console you. After all, it's a woman's destiny to have children. You wouldn't have felt that you had entirely wasted your life.
But, my dear, I don't feel I've entirely wasted my life. You're not yourself tonight. Ill, tired. Oh, what has come over you?
I love you, Stella. I want to take you in my arms as I used to. I want to press my lips to yours and see your eyes close and your head fall back and feel your dear soft body grow tense. Stella. I can't bear it.
Don't. Morris, darling, don't. Don't cry. There.
Don't cry. Oh, my God. What a damn fool I am. Give me a handkerchief.
Here you are. Oh, my dear, you did frighten me.
It's what they call a nerve storm. It was lucky it was only you here. Would have been a pretty kettle of fish if Nurse Wayland had seen me like that.
It would have been a much prettier kettle of fish if I'd seen you clinging to her.
I say, you haven't got a mirror, have you?
My angel, how do you imagine I apply lipstick? Here you are.
I do look rather tear-stained, if I may say so.
Let me powder your nose. You can't think what a comfort it is after you've been upset.
Go on with you. You can give me a whiskey and soda if you like.
All right, but I'll powder mine.
I feel like a house on fire now.
I wish someone would explain how it is that a dab of powder can, in the twinkling of an eye, reduce a woman's nose from an unwieldy lump to a dear little thing that no one can deny is her best feature.
These are the miracles of science that we read about.
Now I'll get you your whiskey and soda.
Thank you. Ah, here's Colin. I'll have a glass of champagne instead.
I'm afraid I've been a devil of a time.
I knew you couldn't be trusted in the cellar by yourself. We were just going to send out a search party after you.
Well, first I couldn't find anything to break the ice with, and then I couldn't find the nippers to cut the wire. And then I thought I might as well put the car away. I didn't want to leave it outside all night.
Meanwhile, Stella is famishing.
Nurse Wayland is just coming. She's making some sandwiches with grilled bacon, and they smell a fair treat.
Oh, here she is. That is kind of you, Nurse. If there's anything I adore, it's bacon sandwiches.
I haven't brought any knives and forks. I thought you could eat with your fingers.
Heavenly.
I'll just bolt up and change my coat. I might just as well be comfortable, and I shan't be a minute.
Well, I'm not going to wait for you.
All right. Well, go right ahead. But leave me my fair share, or else all is over between us.
Oh. I'll call the others.
Righto.
Dr. Harvester, come and eat a sandwich before it gets cold.
I don't think I'll wait to see you people make pigs of yourselves. I think I'll turn in.
Aren't you going to have a drink with us?
I don't think I will after all, if you don't mind.
No.
I'm rather tired.
I'm sorry, Morris. But there's nothing to stay up for if you're tired.
You might look in on your way up to bed, Stella.
Yes, rather. But I shan't disturb you if you're asleep.
I shan't be asleep. I've got a bit of a head, but I'll just lie still in the dark and it'll go away.
Did I hear you calling me?
You did. Morris is going to bed.
Oh,
I am glad. It's fearfully late. Good night, old boy. Sleep well.
Good night, Mother. Bless you.
Let me give you a hand, Nurse.
Oh, I can manage perfectly. I'm so used to wheeling the invalid bed, and he weighs nothing.
Never mind. Let me push him in. I'd like to.
Let the man do something for his money, Nurse.
Oh, very well. Thank you.
Don't be long, Doctor, or the sandwiches will be stone cold.
I won't.
Oh. Morris is rather nervous tonight.
Yes. I noticed it.
I'm sorry I went to the opera.
Oh, my dear, you go out so little.
I haven't the inclination, really.
I'm afraid you're awfully tired.
Dead.
Well, why don't you eat something?
No, I'll wait till the others come.
Whatever happens, my darling, I want you to know that I'm deeply grateful for all you've done for Morris.
Why do you say that? You don't think he's any worse?
No. I think he's just about the same as usual.
Oh, you startled me. I don't know why you should suddenly say a thing like that.
Is there any reason why I shouldn't?
Sounded strangely ominous.
I feel I'd like you to know that I do realize what a great sacrifice you've made for him for so many years. You mustn't think that I've taken it as a matter of course.
Oh, my dear, don't. Don't. If there was anything I could do to make things a little easier for him, I was anxious to do it.
After all, you didn't marry him to be the helpmeet of a helpless cripple.
One takes the rough with the smooth.
You're a young and a very beautiful woman. You have the right to live your life just as everyone else has. And for years now, you've given up everything to be the sole comfort of a man who was your husband only because a legal ceremony had joined you together.
No, no, because love had joined us together.
Oh, my poor child. I'm so desperately sorry for you. Whatever the future may have in store, I shall never forget your courage, your self-sacrifice and your patience.
I don't understand what you mean.
Don't you?
Hello, where are the others?
Morris has gone to bed. Dr. Harvester is just coming.
Now, come on, children, and sit down and have something to eat.
I'll pour out some wine, shall I?
Mmm, scrumptious.
Yes, Nurse Whelan does make them well, doesn't she?
Marvellously.
Good night, Nurse.
Oh, Doctor, if you don't hurry up, you'll be too late. These sandwiches are simply lovely.
Well, I just have a sandwich and swallow one glass and push off. It's any old time, and I've got to be up bright and early in the morning.
Is Morris all right?
He's a bit down tonight for some reason. I don't know why. He was in great spirits earlier in the evening.
Yes, I expect he's tired. He would sit up.
He says he's got a headache. I've left him a sleeping draught that he can take if he can't get off or wakes in the night and feels restless.
I'll go in and see him before I go to bed. If he can only get a good rest, I'm sure he'll be his usual self tomorrow.
Sit with him a little, Stella.
Of course I will.
Well, I must be off. Good night, Mrs. Tappert. I've had a jolly evening.
I'll come and see you to the door, and then I shall go to bed. Good night, children.
Good night.
Good night, Colin, dear. Now, don't stay up too late, either of you.
I'll put out the lights and see that the windows are properly closed and the safety catches are in place. I will, Mother.
You see how these boys treat me, Doctor? They've no respect for their ages, Mother.
A certain amount of restrained affection, however.
Bless you, my dear. Now and always.
Good night.
Good night, Doctor. Good night. We shall see you in a day or two, I suppose.
I expect so.
Good night, old boy. Stella. Stella.
Oh, Colin.
Oh, my poor darling.
Don't touch me. Oh, what shall I do? Colin, what have we done?
Darling.
Morris was so strange tonight. I couldn't make him out. I was almost afraid he suspected.
Oh, impossible.
He must never know, never. I'll do anything in the world to prevent it.
Oh, I'm so terribly sorry.
We're in a hopeless pass. Hopeless. Why did you ever love me? Why did I ever love you?
Stella.
Oh, I'm so ashamed.
Major Lecomte, sir.
Oh, Colin.
It's nice of you to have come.
My dear boy, what an awful thing. I'm absolutely horrified. I've only just this minute heard.
As you can imagine, we're all very much upset.
I've been playing golf. I went out early. I had a match at 9, and someone told me at the clubhouse when I got in. I just couldn't believe it.
I'm afraid it's true all the same.
But Morris seemed comparatively well last night.
Anyhow, no worse than usual.
I thought he was in such good spirits. He was full of fun, cracking jokes.
Yes, I know.
Of course, I haven't heard any of the details. Was he taken suddenly worse in the night?
No, he said he was rather tired. It was getting a bit late, you know. Harvester was here and he helped Nurse Whelan to put him to bed. He seemed all right then.
Well, what did he just die in his sleep?
I suppose so.
Well, that's the best way, isn't it? We'd all give something to know for certain that when our time came, we'd pass away like that.
He can't have felt ill, or he'd have rung. He had a bell push under his pillow, and it rings in Nurse Wayland's room. Well, she'd have been down like a flash if there'd been a sound.
And she heard nothing?
Nothing.
When did you find out, then?
Well, you see, sometimes, if he'd had a poorish night, you know, he slept rather late in the morning, and he was always allowed to sleep on. You know what nurses are.
Yes.
However rotten a night you've had, you must be washed and have your hair brushed and your pillows shaken.
Don't I know it?
Well, Stella stopped all that. She insisted that no one should go into Morris till he rang. Mm. I believe it was the only matter on which there'd been any friction between Stella and Nurse Wayland. Stella said she didn't want to interfere with anything else, but on that point she insisted, and Nurse Wayland could either knuckle under or go.
Quite right.
We were just finishing breakfast when Nurse Wayland came in. I noticed she was very white. She said she'd just been into Morris. Then Stella got right up on her hind legs. "I won't have it," she said. "I've forbidden you to go in till he rings." I've never seen Stella in such a passion. I saw that Nurse Wayland was trembling. She looked all funny. Scared, you know. But not of Stella. "Is anything the matter, nurse?" I asked. She gave a sort of cry and clenched her hands. "I'm afraid he's dead," she said.
Good God. How awful.
Well, Stella gave a sort of gasp, and then she went into a dead faint.
Your poor mother.
Oh, mother was wonderful. I sprang forward to help Stella. She'd fallen on the floor. For a moment, I was afraid the shock had killed her. And I saw mother sitting at the table with a piece of toast in her hand. She just looked at Nurse Wayland. I don't know, as though she couldn't understand. She was awfully white. And then she began to tremble. She never made a sound. She shrank back into her chair, and she seemed all of a sudden to become an old, old woman.
Why didn't that fool of a nurse break it to you more gently?
Then Mother stood up. She got hold of herself quicker than any of us. I never knew she had such nerve.
Oh, she's a woman in a thousand. I've always known that.
She said to me, "You'd better go for Dr. Harvester." By God, I shall never get the sound of her voice out of my ears.
Oh, hold on, old man. It's no good your going to pieces. Don't tell me any more if it upsets you.
No, I'm all right. There's nothing more to tell. Mother said, "Nurse and I'll see to Stella." That seemed to pull Nurse Wayland up. She came forward, and she and Mother began to get Stella round. I went into Morris's room. I felt his pulse, and I put my hand on his heart. He looked as if he was asleep. I knew he was dead. I got the car and went to Dr. Harvester's and brought him back with me. He said he thought poor Morris had been dead for a good 2 hours.
Did he say what had happened?
He thinks it may have been an embolism or perhaps heart failure, you know.
Hmm. How about Stella?
Oh, she's all right, thank God. My God, she did give me a fright.
Oh, I don't wonder.
Harvester wanted her to go to bed, but she wouldn't. She's in Morris's room now.
What about your mother?
Harvester's with her. He had to go and see some patients, but he said he'd come back, and he turned up just before you did.
Dr. Harvester, sir.
Hello, Major. Thank you, Alice.
Not at all, Doctor.
This is a very sad errand that's brought you here, Doctor.
Oh, it's naturally been a dreadful shock to Mrs. Tabret and Stella.
How is Mrs. Tabret?
She's bearing up wonderfully.
I wonder if she'd like to see me.
Oh, I'm sure she would.
Shall I run up and see?
Oh, that'd be very kind of you, Colin. Say that if she doesn't want to be bothered with me, she's only got to say so. I shall quite understand.
All right.
You know, I've known Mrs. Tabret for over 30 years. Her husband was in the India Civil.
Yes, she told me.
They were almost the first people I got to know at all well when I went out to India. She's one of the best, you know. Always was. Everybody liked her.
Of course, I've seen a good deal of her during the last 4 years. She's really been wonderful. So has Stella, for that matter.
One can't help being rather thankful it's all over. But I could wish the end hadn't come so suddenly.
Oh, hello, nurse. Thought you were having a rest.
Morning.
Good morning, Major. I'm glad you came round. Mrs. Tabbert will be glad to see you.
I told you to go and lie down, nurse.
I couldn't. I was too restless.
I'm afraid it's been as great a shock to Nurse Wayland as it has to the rest of us. After all, she'd been looking after Morris for a long time.
Yes, it's been a great shock to me. He was a dear. One couldn't help admiring him. He bore his terrible misfortune with so much courage.
He was splendid.
I naturally grew attached to him. He was always so grateful for what one did for him.
Mm.
A nurse naturally doesn't like to lose a patient, especially so unexpectedly.
It was always on the cards that he'd go out suddenly.
Like a candle that you blow out when you don't want it anymore. Where does the flame go then?
My dear, I'm afraid you're taking poor Morris's death a good deal more to heart than is quite wise.
Do you think he was only a case to me? Even a nurse is human. Strange as it may seem, she has a heart like other people.
Of course she has a heart, but it doesn't do her or her patients any good if she allows her emotions to get the better of her common sense.
Does that mean you think I've been inefficient?
No, of course not. Heaven knows you never spared yourself. Now, you take my advice and go for a holiday. What you want is a real rest.
What is it, in your opinion, that Morris Tabbert actually died of?
Heart failure.
Everybody dies of heart failure.
Of course, but that's as good a thing as any to put on the death certificate.
Are you going to have a post-mortem?
No, why should I? It's quite unnecessary.
I don't agree with you.
I'm sorry, but it's my affair. If I'm prepared to sign the death certificate, I don't know that anyone else has any right to say anything about it.
You've told me half a dozen times that Morris Tabbert might have lived for years.
So he might. I can tell you now that it's a blessing for everybody concerned with him that he didn't.
Dr. Harvester, Morris Tabbert was murdered.
What are you talking about?
Do you want me to repeat it? Morris Tabbert was murdered.
Rubbish.
I dare say you're not quite yourself this morning, nurse. It's very natural. But you must try to be reasonable. You oughtn't to say things that you can't possibly mean.
I am in complete possession of my senses, Major LeConda, and I know perfectly well what I am saying.
Do you mean to say that you intended that statement to be taken literally?
Quite.
Right. It's a very serious thing to say, you know.
I am aware of that.
It's grotesque.
You have known me for 5 years, Dr. Harvester. Have I ever given you to imagine that I am a neurotic or hysterical woman, given to talking in a wild or exaggerated way?
Do you mean that you're dissatisfied with the way your patient was treated by Dr. Harvester?
Is that it, nurse? Well, don't hesitate to say anything you want to. I shan't be in the least offended.
So far as I could judge, you did everything for Morris Tabbert that medical skill could do.
Besides, he was surely seen by several specialists.
Half a dozen, at the least.
Well, Nurse Wayland?
I am a trained nurse, Major LeConda. You surely don't imagine that if Morris Tabbert had died as the result of an error in treatment on Dr. Harvester's part, that I should be so heartless as to distress the relatives by mentioning it. I have made a definite charge, and I stick to it.
The charge being that some person or persons unknown murdered Morris Tabbert.
Yes.
But why should anyone want to murder poor Morris?
That at present is no business of mine.
Now, look here, nurse, you know just as well as I do that everyone was devoted to Morris. No one was ever more surrounded with love and affection than he was. It's incredible that anyone should even have wished him harm.
Whatever I may or may not think, I am at liberty to keep to myself. I am not in the witness box.
The witness box? Do you already see yourself giving sensational evidence at the Old Bailey?
I can honestly say that I can imagine nothing more hateful than the notoriety if I were obliged to appear in court.
There'd be notoriety, all right. Come now, you know just as well as I do that Morris died of natural causes. What on earth is the use of making a fuss and getting everyone upset?
If he died of natural causes, a post-mortem will prove it. And then I shall have nothing more to say.
I'm not going to have a post-mortem. You know how the relatives hate it.
Are you afraid of what it will show?
Of course not.
I warn you that if you sign the death certificate, I shall go straight to the coroner and make a protest.
I should have thought the Tabberts had had enough to put up with.
Major LeConda, will you tell me, what is the duty of a nurse who has reason to believe that her patient has come to his death by foul play?
I should suppose that her duty is quite clear. But I think she should be very sure that her reasons are valid before she exposes to distress and publicity a family that has treated her with unvarying kindness.
Major LeConda, you are right. Everyone in this house has treated me with the greatest consideration. I therefore do at least owe it to them to make no charges that may concern them behind their backs.
Does that mean you want them sent for?
Please.
Yes. Yes, I think that would be best. You've been so definite, Nurse Wayland, that neither Dr. Harvester nor I can keep the matter to ourselves. However distressing it may be, I think Morris's family should know what you have to say.
Well, I'm quite prepared to tell them. In point of fact, I think Mrs. Tabret is just coming.
Where is Stella?
Do you want her too?
I think it's better. Oh, Colin as well.
Oh, I'll see if I can find them.
I believe Stella's in Morris's room.
Don't judge me until you've heard all I have to say, Major LeConda.
Nurse Wayland, I happen to be a very old friend of the Tabrets and deeply attached to Mrs. Tabret. I regret that you should think it is your duty at this moment of all others to add to their great sorrow. I can only hope that you'll be shown not to have been justified.
My dear old friend.
I felt that I must come and see you for a moment, my dear. I'm sure you know her.
It was very kind of you to come and just like you.
You're being very brave, my dear.
I want only to think that my son has ended his long martyrdom. I will not weep because he is dead. I will rejoice because he is free.
Ah, Dr. Harvester told me you were here, Major, and wanted to see us.
Well, I just wanted to tell you how much I feel for you all.
Thank you. You know, Morris and I often talked of death. He was never afraid of it. He didn't attach very much importance to it. He told me that he didn't wish me to wear mourning for him. He wanted me to go about and do things exactly as if he were alive.
He loved you so much, Stella. He put your happiness above everything.
Yes. You know, Morris never quite believed that with this life, everything ended for him. He didn't believe in a great many things that many people still more or less believe in.
I could never bring myself to teach my children what I couldn't myself believe. When they were little, and I used to sit in the evenings and look at the multitudinous stars sweeping across the blue sky of India and think of what we are, so transitory and so insignificant, and yet with such a capacity for suffering and such a passion for beauty. I was overwhelmed by the mystery and the immensity of the universe. I couldn't conceive what was the cause of all those worlds I saw above me, nor what was the power that guided them. What I vaguely divined was too stupendous to fit into the limits of any creed of men.
He didn't believe with his reason, but in some strange way with his nerves or his heart, that perhaps there was something in the Eastern notion of the transmigration of souls. Nurse, I want to thank you for everything you did for Morris, and I want you to know how deeply grateful I am to you.
I did no more than my duty.
Oh, no, you did much more than that. If it had only been your duty, you could never have been so immensely thoughtful. You've been so awfully kind.
Your husband was a very easy patient. He was always anxious not to give trouble.
I've got a little plan that I want to tell you about. You've had a long and hard time here, and your month's holiday a year has been very little rest. My dear, a nurse's salary is never very large. I know that Morris has left me everything he had. It would be dear of you if you'd let me make you a present of a few £100, so that you could go for a year's holiday and need not think of earning your living for a while.
Do you think I would take money from you?
But what on earth is the harm of it? Oh, come, nurse, don't be unreasonable. You know I don't want to offend you.
What I've done, I've been paid for. If I wasn't satisfied with the payment I received, I only had to go.
Nurse, what is the matter? Why do you speak to me like that?
You mustn't take what Nurse Wayland says too literally. She's really not herself today.
Stella, I've got something very unpleasant to tell you. I would sooner not have added to your present trouble, but I'm afraid it can't be avoided.
What is it?
Nurse Wayland
is not satisfied that Morris died from heart failure.
But if Dr. Harvester says so, surely he knows best.
I'm prepared to sign the death certificate. I've no doubt in my mind of the cause of death.
Nurse Whalen thinks there ought to be a post-mortem.
Never. Never. Poor Morris's body has suffered enough. I won't have him cut about to satisfy an idle curiosity. I absolutely refuse.
Well, I understand that an autopsy cannot be held except with the consent of the next of kin.
Or on the order of the coroner.
What does she mean by that?
I'm afraid she means that if you persist in your refusal, she'll go to the proper authority and make the statement she has already made to Dr. Harvester and me.
What is the statement?
Do you wish to repeat it, Nurse Wayland?
Not particularly. I have no objection to your doing so.
Nurse Wayland states that Morris's death was not due to illness, but to some other cause.
I'm dreadfully sorry, but I don't understand. What other cause could have brought about his death?
She says he was murdered.
Murdered! You must be mad, Nurse.
Harvester and I have pointed out to her that he was regarded by everyone connected with him with the greatest affection.
It's preposterous.
After the first shock, I'm almost inclined to laugh. Is that why you were so funny when I asked you to accept enough money to take a year's holiday?
I had no wish that the matter should go so far now. If Dr. Harvester had agreed to my suggestion of having a post-mortem, nothing need have been said until it was discovered if my suspicions were justified or not.
Willing to wound and yet afraid to strike, Nurse Wayland.
You have forced me into this position, Dr. Harvester. I only did my duty in telling you my very grave suspicions. And the moment I did, you took up a definitely hostile attitude towards me.
Well, if you want to know, I thought you silly, nervous, and hysterical.
Or is it that you are frightened to death of a scandal?
I admit I shouldn't welcome publicity, but I can honestly say that if it were my duty, I wouldn't let my own interests stop me from doing it.
All that is neither here nor there. Nurse Wayland has presumably some grounds for her statement. Perhaps she'd better give them.
Thank you. Major LaConda. Mr. Morris often had bouts of sleeplessness. Dr. Harvester had prescribed various sedatives, but he found that chloralin was the one that he supported best. Is that true, Doctor?
Quite. I explained to Morris the danger of his growing dependent on drugs and begged him not to take a dose without my permission or Nurse Whalen's.
I am quite sure that he never did.
So am I. He was very sensible, and he understood my point. He certainly wasn't lacking in self-control.
Will you tell Major LaConda what instructions you gave me last night?
He was excited and overwrought. I asked Nurse Whalen to give him a tablet and told him that if he woke in the night, he could take it. I thought he'd probably drop off for half an hour or so and then wake up and not be able to get sleep again.
I dissolved a tablet in half a glass of water and I put it by his bedside. I noticed that there were only 5 tablets left in the bottle, and I made up my mind to order some more. This morning, the bottle was empty.
That's very strange.
Very.
How did you happen to notice?
I was tidying up. I thought it better to put away all the medicines and the dressings and so on.
Would 5 tablets have a fatal effect, Doctor?
6. I left one dissolved in water by the side of his bed.
Yes. There's little doubt that the effect would be fatal.
It's incredible. But it's surely much more likely that someone took them for his own use.
Nurse, are you absolutely sure that last night the bottle contained 5 tablets?
Absolutely. If anyone took them for his own use, it must have been after I went to bed.
But no one went into Morris's room last night after that but me. I went in to say goodnight to him.
How do you know that no one else went into his room?
Who could have? It was only Colin and Mother.
Well, you went upstairs as I was letting myself out, didn't you, Millie?
Yes, I was very tired. I didn't see any reason to wait while the others ate a bacon sandwich.
You didn't go into Morris's room last night, Colin?
Well, no. Why should I? I don't want a sleeping draught to make me sleep.
You're not under the impression that I took the tablets, I suppose, Nurse Wayland?
If you had, you could presumably produce at least 4 of them. Believe me, if you'd taken 25 grains of chloralin at midnight, you wouldn't be sitting there now.
The fact remains that 5 tablets disappeared last night. Where are they?
there's always the possibility that they were taken maliciously by someone who wanted to make trouble.
Do you mean me, Dr. Harvester? What do you think that I can get out of making trouble? Really? I don't know how such a stupid idea can have crossed your mind. Why should I have asked you to have a post-mortem if I knew for certain, as I must have done if I'd taken the tablets out of malice, that it would discover nothing?
Isn't it possible that they could have been taken by somebody this morning?
Who?
A housemaid, for instance?
Well, chlorelin's not a very common drug. Shouldn't have thought a housemaid would ever have heard of it. It's not as though it were aspirin.
I don't know about that. There have been cases in the papers. It's not safe to take it for granted that a housemaid wouldn't have got into the habit of taking something when she couldn't sleep.
Well, it's very easy to make sure. It's Alice who did Morris's room. Let's send for her.
That is unnecessary. She was frightened at the idea of going in. I told her that I would clean up the room and put everything to rights myself. I'm quite sure that she's not been in this morning.
What are we to do, Mother?
You must do exactly what you think fit.
Mrs. Taverett, I know that this must add terribly to your grief. I can't tell you how sorry I am. It seems dreadful that I should have to repay all your kindness to me by increasing your troubles.
My dear, I'm quite ready to believe that you will do nothing and say nothing but what you think is right.
Oh, dear, it's all come as such a dreadful shock.
I think that I should tell you that when I found the tablets were missing, I looked in the glass in which I dissolved the one that I'd prepared for him. There was still about a dessert spoonful of liquid in the bottom of it. I have put it aside, and I suggest that it should be analysed.
You're wasted on your profession, nurse. You have all the makings of a detective.
Wouldn't a draught in which half a dozen tablets have been dissolved be very unpalatable?
No, it would be rather bitter. I suppose if one swallowed it down at a gulp, one would hardly notice till one had already drunk it.
It all sounds very circumstantial. I'm afraid there's a dreadful probability in Nurse Wayland's story.
But, my dear, it's absurd. Who on earth would have thought of murdering Morris?
Oh, that? Yes, I wasn't thinking of that. Nurse Wayland can't seriously think that anyone deliberately gave Morris an overdose of his sleeping draught. But I'm beginning to be desperately afraid that perhaps he took it himself.
Suicide?
He wasn't himself last night. He was very strange. I'd never seen him so nervous.
Was there any reason for that?
I'm afraid so. You see, I'd been to Tristan and we'd seen it together the night we got engaged. It upset him to think of the past.
Did he speak of suicide?
No.
Had he ever done so?
Never. I don't believe it had entered his head.
I am quite convinced that Morris Taverett did not commit suicide.
What reason have you got for saying that?
Sometimes. He was terribly depressed. I didn't think it wise to let him have, within reach, the power of putting an end to himself.
I never saw him depressed.
I know you didn't. You never saw anything.
What have I done to you? Why do you talk to me like that? Your face is all twisted with hate of me. I don't understand.
Don't you?
I'm beginning to be frightened of you. What sort of woman are you that we've had in this house for almost 5 years?
There's nothing to be frightened of, my darling. Now, don't give way to your nerves.
Because he joked and laughed when you were there. Did it never occur to you that there were moments when he was overwhelmed with black misery?
Poor lamb. Why did he insist on hiding it from me?
Oh, his one aim was to make his suffering easy for you to bear. Whatever pain he had, he hid from you so that you shouldn't have the distress of being sorry for him.
It's dreadful that you should say such things. You make me feel that I was so cruel to him.
Oh, everything had to be hidden from you. When you were coming, the medicine bottles, the dressings had to be put away so that there should be nothing to remind you that there was anything the matter with him.
I would willingly have done everything for him that you did. It was his most earnest wish that I shouldn't concern myself with the horrid part of his illness.
And that is true, nurse.
I was nothing. I was only his paid nurse. He didn't try to hide from me the despair that filled his heart. He didn't have to pretend with me. He didn't have to be good-tempered or amusing with me. He could be morose, and he knew I wouldn't mind. He could quarrel with me and then say he was sorry if he'd hurt me, and know that he couldn't hurt me.
What are you telling us, Nurse Wayland?
I am telling the truth at last.
I wonder if you know what strange truth it is.
But, Nurse, what you've been saying suggests that he did have at least moments of despair when he must have thought of suicide. We know that he was overwrought last night. If his death was not due to natural causes, surely it's extremely likely that he brought it about himself.
It was just one of those moments that I was on my guard against. The Clarolin was kept in the bathroom, on an upper shelf that he could not possibly have got at. I had to stand on a chair myself to reach it.
If a man is determined to do a thing, he can often surmount difficulties that others would have thought insuperable.
Ask Dr. Harvester if it would have been possible for Morris Tabret to cross the room, go into the bathroom and stand up on a chair.
He had absolutely no power in the lower part of his body. His back was broken by the accident and the spinal cord terribly injured.
Oh, yes, yes.
And after all, we don't know yet that Morris died of an overdose of chlorolin.
Well, the matter can't be left like this, Harvester. I'm afraid there'll have to be an inquest.
Yes, obviously, I can't sign the death certificate now. I shall have to communicate with the coroner.
I'm sorry, Dr. Harvester.
I'm absolutely convinced that he died of natural causes. I can't offer an explanation of the disappearance of those damn tablets, but there must be an explanation.
The most likely one is that Nurse Wayland was mistaken. Surely, if anyone had taken out half a dozen tablets, he would have put others in their place, aspirin or something, so that they wouldn't be missed.
People don't think of everything. It is only because a murderer makes some mistake that he gets caught.
But damn it all, no one commits a murder without a motive. No one had the smallest reason to wish Morris dead.
How do you know?
Good God, how do I know that 2 and 2 are 4?
Did you know that his wife was going to have a baby?
Stella?
I suspected it last night when she nearly fainted. This morning I knew for certain.
What do you mean? Are you accusing me of having murdered my husband?
Is it true what she says, Stella?
It's quite true.
Well, I realize I'm interfering in matters that are no affair of mine.
My dear Major, I know that you are kindness itself. You've known Mrs. Tabret for ages and Morris and Colin when they were small boys.
All the same, you must see how difficult it is for me to ask the question that inevitably arises in one's mind.
I'll answer without your asking. Of course, it's quite impossible that Morris should have been the father of the child I'm going to have. Since his accident, he has been my husband only in name.
I am the father, Major Leconda.
You? Do you mean to say that it escaped your sharp eyes, Nurse, that Colin and Stella were in love with one another?
Did you know?
I think nowadays the young are apt to think their elders even more stupid than advancing years generally make them.
Oh, Mother, what must you think of me?
Do you very much care?
I suppose I ought to be terribly ashamed of myself. But I can no more help loving Colin than I can help the rain falling.
You're shameless.
But, Mother, you have every right to think that I treated Morris abominably. He's beyond the reach of pain. But I bitterly regret the pain I've caused you. I have no excuses to make for myself.
My dear, don't you remember what I said to you last night when I thanked you for all you'd done for Morris? Did you think I was talking at random? I knew then that you were going to have a baby and that Colin was its father.
You mustn't think I didn't struggle against it. I said to myself that the only return I could make Morris for all the devotion he gave me was by remaining faithful to him and loyal.
I'm sure you did.
I told myself that Morris was a cripple, bedridden, sick, the victim of an unforeseen misfortune, that it would be foul of me to betray him. I tried to drive Colin away. I did everything except ask him to go. I couldn't do that. I couldn't. I pretended to myself that it was on your account and on Morris's. You hadn't seen him for so long. Morris was so pleased to have him here.
But it's quite true that I hadn't seen Colin for a long time, and Morris was tremendously pleased to have him here.
I don't understand you. Mrs. Tabret, you seem to be going out of your way to find excuses for your daughter-in-law. If you knew what was going on, why didn't you stop it?
I'm afraid I shall shock you, nurse. I want to put it as delicately as I can, but it's a matter that we English have made indelicate by prudishness and hypocrisy. Stella is young, healthy and normal. Why should I imagine she has not got the instincts that I had at her age? When Morris's accident made it impossible for him and Stella ever to live again as man and wife, I asked myself if she would be able to support so false a relationship. Their love was deep and passionate, but it was rooted in sex. It might have come about with time that it would have acquired a more spiritual character. They did not have that time.
May I ask how long you'd been married?
I was married to Morris about a year before he crashed.
A year? A whole year?
Out of his suffering, a new love did spring up in Morris's heart. A hungry, clinging, dependent love. I didn't know how long Stella would be content with that. I knew that her pity was infinite. I knew it was so great that she mistook it for love. And I prayed that she would never find out her mistake. She meant everything in the world to Morris. Everything. But I feared the time would come when she could no longer stand the miserable life that was all he had to offer her. If she wanted to go, I felt we hadn't the right to prevent her. And I knew that if she went, Morris would die.
I would never have left him. It never entered my head that it was possible.
I saw the strain that it began to be on her nerves. She was as kind as ever and as gentle, but it was an effort. And what is the good you do worth unless you do it naturally as the flowers give their scent?
I have never been given to understand that good is only good if it's easy to do.
No, I don't suppose it is. But if it's difficult, then I think it benefits the person who does it rather than the person it's done to. That is why it is more blessed to give than to receive.
I don't understand you. I think what you say is odious and cynical.
Then I'm afraid you'll think what I'm going to say now even more cynical and odious. I found myself half wishing that Stella would take a lover.
Oh, Mrs. Tabret.
I was willing to shut my eyes to anything so long as she stayed with Morris. I wanted her to be kind and thoughtful and affectionate to him, and I didn't care for the rest. When Colin came back, and after a while I realized that he and Stella were in love with one another, I did nothing to prevent the almost inevitable consequences. I didn't deliberately say it to myself in so many words. Oh, that would have shocked me. But in my heart was a feeling that this would make it all right for Morris. She wouldn't go now. She was bound to this house by a stronger tie than pity or kindness.
Didn't it strike you what great dangers you were exposing them to?
I didn't care. I only thought of Morris. When they were children, I think I loved them equally. But since his accident, I haven't had room in my heart for anyone but Morris. He was everything to me. For him, I was prepared to sacrifice Colin and Stella. I hope they'll forgive me.
Oh, my dear. As though there was anything to forgive.
Mother.
You'll only laugh at me if I say that I'm shocked. I can't help it. I'm shocked to the very depth of my soul.
I was afraid you would be, nurse.
I would have gone to the stake for my belief that no unclean thought had ever entered your head. Didn't it revolt you to think that your son's wife was having an affair with a man under your own roof?
I suppose I'm not very easily revolted. I've lived too long to think that my own standard of right and wrong is the only one possible. Perhaps we should all look upon these matters differently if our moral rules hadn't been made by persons who had forgotten the passion and the high spirits of youth. Do you think it's so very wicked if young things surrender to the instincts that nature planted in them?
Did the probable result never occur to you?
A baby. It persuades me of Stella's essential innocence. Otherwise she would have known how to avoid such an accident.
You must admit, nevertheless, that Morris's death has come in the very nick of time to get her out of a very awkward predicament.
Are you sure that your motive for all this is anything more than your bitter hatred of me?
Why should I hate you? Believe me, I only despise you.
You hate me because you were in love with Morris.
How dare you say that?
You gave it away. It had often seemed to me that you were fonder of Morris than a nurse generally is of her patient, and I used to tease him about it. It never struck me that it was serious till this morning. You were madly in love with Morris.
And if I was, what of it?
Nothing. Except that it's my turn to be shocked. I think it was rather horrible and disgusting.
Yes. Yes, I loved him. My love grew as I saw yours fade. I loved him because he was so helpless and so dependent on me. I loved him because he was like a child in my arms. I never showed him my love. I would sooner have died. And I was ashamed because sometimes I thought that he saw it, but if he did, he understood. He was sorry for me. He knew how bitter it is to long for the love of someone who has no love to give you. My love meant nothing to him. He had no room in his heart for any love but the love of you. And you had no use for it. You think that you were so kind and considerate. If you'd loved him as I loved him, you'd have seen how less than nothing was all that you did for him. I could think of 100 ways to give him happiness, and you hadn't the love to think of any of them.
Yes, it's quite true that I didn't love Morris. I often reproached myself because I couldn't. He seemed so ungrateful, so unkind. But he became no more to me than a very dear friend for whom I was desperately sorry.
Do you think he wanted your pity?
I know he didn't, but pity was all I had to give him. Who was it that said that pity was akin to love? There's all the world between them.
Yes, all the hideousness of sex.
And do you believe there was nothing of sex in your love for Morris?
No. No. For that poor boy was as pure and as spiritual as my love for God. There was never a shadow of self in it. I never asked anything but to be allowed to serve and to tend him. I never touched his lips until they were cold in death. And now I have lost everything that made life lovely to me. What was he to you? What was he to his mother? To me, he was my child, my friend, my lover. My God. And you killed him.
That's a lie.
Nurse Wayland, you have no right to say that.
It is true, and you know it.
I know nothing of the kind. I only know that you've worked yourself up into a state in which you're saying all sorts of things for which you have no justification.
I could no more have killed Morris than I could walk a tightrope. Doesn't it occur to you that there was nothing to prevent my leaving him? Who could have blamed me?
How would you have lived? You haven't a penny of your own. I've heard you tell Morris 100 times that you had to mind your P's and Q's because you knew that he was your only means of livelihood.
Ah, I certainly shouldn't have repeated a feeble little joke so often. I suppose I could have worked.
Worked? You, do you know what it means to work for your living? All your life you've been petted and spoiled and pampered, and you knew you were going to have a child. How could you have worked?
You're really going too far, Nurse Wayland. We can't stand here and let you insult Stella.
There was Colin, you know.
I don't think he would have left me in the lurch.
He certainly wouldn't.
And what would you have had to go through before he could marry you? Not only exposure to your husband, but the divorce court. It wouldn't have been a very pretty case.
It would have been horrible.
Do you think his love for you would have stood that test? Are you sure he wouldn't have hated you for the disgrace that you had thrust upon him? Men are sensitive, you know. More sensitive than women, and they're afraid of scandal.
I may not be typical of my sex. I don't think I should like it either.
You don't have to tell me that. Why are you letting me stand here and talk as I'm talking, but that you think that you can persuade me or bribe me into holding my tongue? Why haven't these men, who are your friends and who hate me, thrown me out? Because they're afraid of me. They're afraid of scandal. They're afraid of publicity. Isn't that true?
Very probably.
And you are not only afraid of scandal, you are afraid of your neck.
No, that's not true.
You are in a hopeless position. And there was only one way out of your difficulties. You know as well as I do that your treachery, your monstrous cruelty would have broken your husband's heart. You couldn't face that. And so you preferred to kill him.
Aren't you falling into a rather vulgar error, my dear? I know that when people talk of a good woman, they mean a chaste one, but isn't that a very narrow view of goodness? Chastity is a very excellent thing, but it isn't the whole of virtue. There's kindness and courage and consideration for others, and I'm not sure if there isn't also humour and common sense.
Are you defending her for having been untrue to your son?
I'm excusing her, Nurse Wayland. I know she gave Morris all she could. The rest was not in her power.
Oh, well, I realize now that how you look upon such things, nothing matters very much. There's no guilt in sin, and no merit in virtue.
May I tell you a little story about myself? When I was still a young woman with a husband and two children, I fell deeply in love with a young officer who had charge of the police in my husband's district, and he fell deeply in love with me.
Millie, my dear.
I'm an old woman now, and he's an elderly retired major. But in those days, we were all the world to one another. I didn't yield to my love on account of my boys. It nearly broke my heart. Now, you know, I'm very glad I didn't. One recovers from the pain of love. When I look at that funny old-fashioned major now, I wonder why he ever excited in me such turbulent emotions. I could have told Colin and Stella that in 30 years it wouldn't much matter if they resisted their love. But people don't learn from the experience of others.
But you did resist. You could always say that.
I think it was easier then, you know. We attached more importance to chastity then than we do now. Yes, I resisted. But because I know the anguish it was, I feel I have the right to forgive those who are less virtuous or perhaps more courageous than I.
Oh, my dear, you're so kind. So wise.
No, my darling, I'm only so old.
Stella, Nurse Wayland's accusation is very definite, and it must be met.
Her accusation is absurd.
Can you suggest anyone who had the slightest motive for wishing he was dead?
No.
I'm sure you want to help us to get at the truth. Now, you must forgive me if I ask you some embarrassing questions.
Of course.
What did you propose to do when you discovered you were going to have a baby?
I was frightened. At first I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what to do.
And you knew that it couldn't be concealed for very long.
Naturally.
Did you tell anyone?
No. I was trying to screw up courage to ask Dr. Harvester what I'd better do. I didn't mind for myself. It was Morris I was thinking of.
You must have had some plan.
Oh, 100. I thought of nothing else day and night.
I suppose you never thought of making a clean breast of it to Morris.
No, never. It would have broken his heart.
You appear to have been the last person who saw him alive. Why was he upset?
Need I tell you? It was so very private.
Well, no, of course not. I've no right to ask you.
But for your own sake, I think it would be better if you told us everything.
He broke down because he couldn't love me as he wanted to love me. He would have so liked me to have a baby.
And when you said goodnight to him, did he make no further reference to that?
No, none. He'd quite recovered. He was in perfectly good spirits again.
What did he say?
He just asked me if we'd enjoyed our snack, and then he said you'd better get off to bed. And I kissed him, said goodnight.
How long were you in his room?
5 minutes.
Did he say that he felt sleepy?
No.
I suppose you knew where the chlorolin was kept.
Vaguely. I knew that all his bottles and things were in the bathroom. He hated his bedroom to be littered.
Did he ask you for anything before you went?
No, there was nothing he wanted. Nurse Wayland had fixed him up quite comfortably.
You don't understand. Major LeConda is giving you an opportunity of saying that your husband asked you for the chlorolin and that you, thinking no harm, gave it to him. You saw him take out 5 or 6 tablets and then you replaced the bottle on the shelf.
Oh, I never thought of that. That would have been quite a good way out if I'd poisoned my husband. No, Major, Morris never asked me for the chlorolin and I never gave it to him.
You've done what you thought your duty, Nurse Wayland. Well and good. If now you have other things to do, I don't think we need take up any more of your time.
Oh, I'll go. There's nothing more for me to do here. I started packing my things. I shall be ready in 10 minutes.
You must take your time, Nurse.
Mrs. Tabret, I couldn't go without thanking you for all your kindness to me.
My dear, you were never any trouble. It was never difficult to be kind to you.
I'm dreadfully sorry to have to repay all you've done for me by bringing this confusion and unhappiness upon you. I know that you hate me, but it seems frightful, but I do ask you to believe that I can't help myself.
Before you go, my dear, I should like it, if I could, to release your spirit from the bitterness that is making you so unhappy. God bless you, my dear, for the kindness you showed my poor Morris and for the unselfish love that you bore him. Oh, no. My dear, now you mustn't lose your admirable self-control.
You'd better leave an address, Nurse Wayland. Dr. Harvester will communicate with the proper authorities, and I've no doubt they'll want to get in touch with you.
I shall go and see the coroner and put the facts before him. Would you like to come with me, Nurse?
No.
If Mrs. Tabret doesn't mind, I'll ring up his place from here and find out if he's in.
Of course I don't mind, but before you do that, may I say something?
Of course.
I'll try to be brief. Nurse Wayland is mistaken in thinking that Stella was the last person who saw Morris alive. I saw him and spoke to him later.
You?
But was he wide awake? If he'd taken 30 grains of chlorolin, he'd have been certainly very drowsy, if not comatose.
Wait a minute, Dr. Harvester. Please, let me tell you my story in my own way.
I beg your pardon.
You know that Morris's room was just under mine. His windows were always wide open, and when he couldn't sleep and put on his light, I could see the reflection from my room. Then I used to slip down and sit by him, and we'd put out the light, and we'd talk about his childhood in India and about my own youth. Sometimes we'd talk about things that few men care to speak of in the broad light of day. He'd tell me of his great love for Stella, and how anxious he was for her welfare and happiness. And often he'd fall asleep, and then I'd steal softly away. Oh, we never mentioned these long conversations we had. I didn't want Stella to think that I was in any way taking her place.
Oh, my dear, I wouldn't have grudged you anything.
There was no need to. I couldn't sleep last night. There was no light in Morris's room, but I felt strangely that he was lying awake too. So I went downstairs and into the garden and I looked in at his window. He saw my shadow and said, Is that you, Mother? I thought you might come in.
What time was that?
Oh, I don't know. It was perhaps an hour after you left. He told me that he'd taken his sleeping draught, but it didn't seem to be having any effect, and he said he felt awfully wide awake. And then he said, Mother, be a sport, and give me another. It can't hurt just for once, and I do want to have a decent sleep.
Somehow or other, he was very nervous last night. I suppose his usual dose wasn't any good.
Very early after his accident, I had promised Morris that if life became intolerable to him, I would give him the means of putting an end to it.
Oh, God.
I said that if his sufferings were so great that he couldn't bear them any more, and he solemnly asked me to help him, I wouldn't shirk the responsibility. And sometimes he'd say, does the promise still hold? And I answered, yes, dear, it holds.
Did he ask you last night?
No.
What happened then?
I knew that Stella's love meant everything to Morris, and I knew that she'd none to give him, because she'd given all her love to Colin. What do any of us live for but our illusions? And what can we ask of others but that they should allow us to keep them? It was an illusion that sustained poor Morris in his suffering. And if he lost it, he lost everything. Stella had done as much for him as even I, his mother, could ask of her. I was not so selfish as to demand from her the sacrifice of all that makes a woman's life worthwhile.
Why didn't you give me the chance?
Years ago, when I resisted my love for Major LeConda, I thought that no greater sacrifice could ever be asked of me. I know now that it was nothing, for I loved Morris. I adored him. And I'm so lonely now that he's dead. It was a lovely dream that he dreamed, and I loved him too much to let him ever wake from it. I gave him life and I took life away from him.
Oh, Mrs. Tappert. Oh, how dreadful.
I went into the bathroom and I got the bottle of chloroline and I took 5 tablets, as you know, Nurse Wayland, and I dissolved them in a glass of water. I took it into Morris and he drank it at a gulp, but it was bitter. He mentioned it. And I suppose that's why he left a little at the bottom of the glass. I sat by the side of his bed, holding his hand until he fell asleep. And when I withdrew my hand, I knew it was a sleep from which he would never awake. He dreamed his dream to the end.
Oh, Mother, Mother, what have you done? And what will be the end of this? I'm so terrified.
Now, my dear, don't bother about me. What I did deliberately, and I'm quite ready to put up with the consequences.
But it's my fault. It's my weakness. How can I ever forgive myself? What have I done?
You mustn't be silly and sentimental. You love Colin, and Colin loves you. You mustn't think about me, nor distress yourself at what happens to me. You must go away. And in America, you can marry and have your child, and you must forget the past and the dead. For you're young. And the young have a right to life, and the future belongs to them.
Mother, darling. Oh, Mother, you make me so ashamed.
My son, I love you too. I have your happiness very much at heart.
Millie, my dear, dear Millie.
Well, Nurse Wayland, you see you were quite right. Of course, I ought to have replaced the tablets by others, but as you said just now, murderers often make mistakes. And I'm not an habitual criminal.
Dr. Harvester, are you still willing to sign the death certificate?
Yes.
Then sign it. If there were ever any question, I am prepared to swear that I left the tablets on Morris's table by his bed.
Nurse.
Isn't it a dreadful risk you're taking, Doctor?
damn it, I don't care.
Oh, nurse, we're so grateful to you. Infinitely grateful.
Oh, Mrs. Tablet. I've been petty and revengeful. I never knew how mean I was.
Now, come, my dear. Don't let us get emotional. We're both of us lonely women now. Let us help one another. So long as you and I keep our love for Maurice alive in our hearts, he's not entirely dead.
In The Sacred Flame by William Somerset Maugham, Maurice Tabret was played by Julian Glover, Mrs. Tabret by Wendy Hiller, Nurse Wayland, Hannah Gordon, Stella, Janet Moore, Major Lekonda, Alan Wheatley, Dr. Harvester, Preston Lockwood, Colin, David Gouge, and Alice, Melinda Walker. The director was Graham Gold.